Hello, you're about to listen to the Movie Mixtape with Dirk and Marcy. This is our 42nd episode, and it is my pick this week, and it's Christmas Presents still as our mix, where we're just picking movies we feel like we really want to share with each other for this time of the year. So I went with 1960's The Apartment, which is an all-time classic for me, and hopefully it will be for Dirk as well. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the mix.
How are you today?
Hello, Dirk. I'm excellent. This is the greeting I've been waiting for a while. But how are you?
I'm okay, but consider this controlled, rational greeting my Christmas gift to you, Marcy, week, episode 42 of the Movie Mixtape.
Yes. Oh, wait, I did want to bring that. 42, The Answer to Life and Everything. Oh. And I just love Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy so much. So 42 is one of my lucky numbers.
Brilliant. you're increasing the value of this opening exponentially because of that.
I have a Tao. I have my Tao with me. I love Hitchhiker's Guide so much.
You gave me a smoker's cough then. I'm sorry. Episode 42. 42 of the Movie Mixtape, and it is the second episode of our Christmas Presents Mixtape, after the awesomeness of The Muppets Christmas Carol with Cablasto and Megan last week. Go back and listen to that if you ain't listened to it. But what are we going to do today, Marcy Dale?
So, one, I just want to first mention that I'm glad that you really took to heart, like, continuing the spirit of Christmas each and every day by not only giving me a nice greeting today, but also laughing at my pathetic Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy jokes. So, thank you.
Well, I know you appreciate it when I laugh at you.
So, you let me pick first, which is very thoughtful of you as well. And I went with 1960's The Apartment. So what the mix is for right now, just an update. If you didn't listen to Muppet Christmas Carol, I'm having a baby pretty soon.
What?
I'm taking a break here in a little bit, in a couple weeks. And so we just wanted to really pick things, that we really wanted to share with each other. There were no obligations or anything that needed to apply to them, but I still went by the rules. Yeah. So we'll see if you do later. And so this is just a movie that, you know, we're going to get into in a little bit why I specifically picked it and why I wanted you to watch it. But this movie is a very big deal for movie lovers. I think a lot of movie lovers are aware of it.
Passive aggressive insult already, and you don't even know what my opinion is. Like, I want to come back to two of your points, okay?
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm. One, when you said there's no obligation. Mm-hmm. The only obligation here, Marcy, is for you to raise your child in a correct and appropriate manner. All right, that's your obligation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Two, yeah, given the chance to break the rules, you decided to not break the rules and actually stick to the template. What does that say about your risk-taking mindset at the minute? Minimal. You just want everything safe, secure. I can get it. You're about to have a baby. You want the world full of cushions and safety gates. I get it.
I'm also dealing with you and watching a black and white movie from 1960, so there's nothing safe about it.
Yeah,
really,
yeah. So,
if you think
yeah,
about
so
it.
What you're saying is you've done it to irritate me. Congratulations.
No, I just am trying to get you to see this whole world like classic movies. So
that's true.
We're trying to make it.
Yeah,
happen.
You know, that was kind of if we think back, way back when, that was probably one of the prime movers, wasn't it? That you were disgusted in me for not really knowing much about this era of Hollywood, right back when we were even talking about, well, not even when we were talking about podcasts, when we were just chatting.
It wasn't so much that you not knowing, it was just the, like, unwillingness to try. I've come across a lot of people like that, and I'm like, well, actually, like, if you just watch this one or this one and this one, I think you'll get a different idea of what this era is like, because we'll get, like I said, when I tell you why I picked it, it'll kind of explain like that era, because yeah, a lot of movies in that era are very cheesy and not good, but there's some really, really good mm-hmm. ones also. And mm-hmm. it's just like any decade yeah. for any movie.
100%. Yeah, I've been very resistant. You have thankfully picked good movies. Roman Holiday, we did that. Behind the Curtains, we practiced with His Girl Friday as well, yeah. didn't we? That's a secret tape that only me and you know about. Don't mention that to anyone else, please, if you're listening.
Okay, but we need a Cary Grant redemption at some point.
I didn't quite like Cary Grant. So. No, that's true. Oh, we'll see where the chips fall. Is that the right phrase? Is that an American phrase I've just tried to repeat?
I guess it works.
Thanks.
I never hear anyone say it, but we'll let it happen.
I bet you they'd say it in a film from the 1960s, wouldn't they?
Maybe, I don't know. But
how have you been?
Sure.
Up to much? Feels like only a few days ago that we were chatting.
You know, good. I'm just getting in some holiday watch. Oh, you know what? I do have something fun to talk about. A movie I was really excited about. Came to HBO Max yesterday, and I finally got to watch it. It's Martin McDonagh's new movie, The Banshees of Inisherin. Nice. Are you aware of this
movie? I'm aware of this movie. It has Colin Farrell in, correct?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. And your other man, who's in Bruges with him?
Brendan Gleeson, yes. Do you know Martin McDonagh directed In Bruges, right? Okay.
I know all of these facts and information.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed the movie. It's very good. I think I'm going to like it even more on a rewatch because it was not what I was expecting. And I should have had some insight because it is a Martin McDonagh movie. And there's always something very odd in those movies. But it's just about friendship and how we lose friendships and we don't know why sometimes and how that can make you feel. So it's like depression and grief and loss, and I really enjoyed it. I think it might be Colin Farrell's best performance. And you know what? Fun fact, I really never liked Colin Farrell until I saw In Bruges for the first time, like years and years and years ago. And now I love Colin Farrell. And man, what a year he's having, because he also was the Penguin in the Batman earlier this year. And he was really good as the Penguin. Like, really good. Like, really funny, really creepy, really, like, you know, everything you want that character to be. So, that's just my tidbit. If you want to give that movie a shot, I think you would like, I think you'd like the Banshees movie. If you liked In Bruges, it's not as funny. I think it's a little bit darker. I can't believe I'm saying it's darker than In Bruges. But it somehow kind of is a little bit darker than In Bruges, maybe. It's not as funny, but okay. If you like that movie, I think you would like the Banshees movie.
That was going to be my question. Is it funny? And you've answered it. So you don't need to repeat your answer. Okay. You've answered it. Right, well, that was my question I had in my head. Do you think Colin Farrell is a bit of an actor trapped in a pretty man's face, isn't he?
Yeah, you know what? I think what happened when he first got really famous was, like, yeah, he got probably, like, cast type because of how he looks. But, you know, once you give this guy some chances, you can see, like, what he can actually do. And he's really good. You know what movie he's really good in?
You tell me.
And it was an early role that actually, like, somebody gave a chance on him to do something different. Have you ever seen Minority Report with him and Tom Cruise?
I have not seen Minority Report.
Oh, add it to the list. That's a Steven Spielberg movie from the early 2000s.
I know what it is.
It's actually okay, but it's a really good movie, and Colin Farrell's really good in it, though he tries to have an American accent in it and obviously fails every once in a while, where I think they had to add a backstory that his dad, like, was from Ireland or something. But that was somebody giving him a chance early, but then I think, yeah, he got typecast a little bit.
SWAT.
You know, after that.
I just remember him showing his abs in the trailer or something. I like Colin Farrell. God. I think he's a funny guy.
But have you watched anything? Are you watching Christmas movies? What are you doing right now?
I'm watching movies for this film, this podcast. That's what I'm doing. And then I'm having to have nightly conversations with the elves in our house because they keep moving about. And sometimes they forget to move about, these elves. And I have to go down at like 4 o'clock in the morning and remind them that they need to move and do some stuff because the children in our house expect them to be moving and do various different things. And maybe last night when my daughter walked into my bedroom at 6 a.m. and said, can I get in your bed with you and mum, dad, because I've had a nightmare. I was like, yeah, get in the bed. I suddenly had a realization that I didn't think the elves had moved yet. and I had to get out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning and quickly encourage the elves to find somewhere else to go and do something that somebody might find humorous. So that's my life at the minute. Encouraging elves. Oh, wow. You'd think they'd just do it themselves.
So, yeah, you don't need to watch movies. You're watching the elves 24/7.
Exactly. We've got two. Rainbow is Betsy's elf, and Roxy is a new addition, and she's Iris's elf. I'm not sure Iris really understands that she's got an elf yet, but there we go. Mm-hmm. It was required, apparently, from Betsy. Betsy informed me it was absolutely necessary that we would have a second elf this year. So there we go.
Not only are you sharing an endearing story, but you're prepping me for my future.
That is what is called signposting in the parenting industry to your future 12 months from now. Oh, you might get it. You might not get an elf in 12 months. I think they might only come when they've got they're sentient. I don't know if babies are obviously sentient. But when they've got cognitive abilities.
I will patiently await for my elf to show up, and I will gladly let you know. But hopefully you can get some Christmas movie watching in.
Yeah, well, soon. Do you know, let's make a list. Let's make a list of, we all pick one. There's three of us.
Because oh, that's a cute idea.
Because Iris won't pick one. but yeah, that's it. We're getting in the Christmas zone. Got to do a few more decorations, maybe to the outside of the house, but not to the level of... What's his name?
Clark Griswold.
That's his name.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I know you've never seen that, so maybe this year you can enjoy that. That would be something I do want to experience with you, though, because it is so American that I feel like you just would hate it.
I've seen National Lampoon's Vacation. I've seen European Vacation. I have not seen Christmas Vacation.
Christmas is the best one.
Oh, really?
It is just bold so statement. Funny. I've seen it so many times, and the same things always make me laugh. And I almost thought about doing it just to see what your reaction would be watching it, but it's a must watch. Okay. So I think our three must watch for Christmas: Muppet Christmas Carol, Christmas Vacation, and probably Elf. I'd say those are our three.
Yeah.
But if we could only watch three, those would
be nice. Well, I'm going to pick Muppet's Christmas Carol. I don't know what anybody else will pick, but probably Home Alone will be in there at some point.
Home Alone's great too, yeah. Oh, well, that's fun. And I'm glad, I'm glad you're going to have time to watch them, because it just adds some of the magic to the month with all the craziness going around with it. I think it's time to get into this movie, which is technically a Christmas movie.
Is it technically a Christmas movie, or is it just... accepted as a Christmas movie?
I think it's accepted, but you know what? Just jumping a little bit ahead, one of the reasons I did pick this, just for people that maybe need a Christmas movie that's different and want to try something else out this year, I think this is a good pick. But you can also save it for after Christmas because it ends on New Year's. So it's a good holiday adjacent movie. I did not write a synopsis, but you're giving me the biggest break because of everything going on. So I'll just give a quick
human life.
I will give a quick rundown of what happens. I don't want to spoil everything, but it starts. It starts at the beginning of November. It's 1959, New York City, and we are getting a narration from Cece Baxter, who's played by Jack Lemmon. And he's explaining this company that he works for. He works for an insurance company, and he's explaining what the building's like, what his day-to-day is like, and then he gets into his lovely apartment that he lives at, but that he doesn't spend a lot of time there, and we kind of learn from him that to work his way up in this company, he lets executives use this apartment to bring their mistresses to, so they can fool around there or whatever, and then he can work his way up the corporate ladder through that. And in the meantime, you know, we meet Fran, who is an elevator operator, and you can kind of tell right away that Baxter is smitten with her. He finds her absolutely adorable, and she is very sweet and charming, and we learn a little bit more about Fran. And then there is the head honcho of the whole company, Mr. Sheldrick, and we find out that Mr. Sheldrake wants to use Baxter's apartment to continue his affair with Fran, the elevator operator. So there are some, oh no, you know, twists and turns here and there. So I'm going to leave it at that. I think when we talk about the movie some more, we'll break down like what all happens and the ending and some of the other things in this movie.
You know what I like about that synopsis? It's actually intelligible and understandable, unlike some of the nonsense that we've come up with over the last 42 episodes.
Oh my gosh.
That was clear as crystal.
That was all off the top of my head. Tell. You know,
I could tell.
Yeah, I would have nothing written down. It's just like, this is like Roman Holiday for me, where it's like, I've seen this movie so many times and I love this movie that, you know, I just know how to explain it. Like, to pitch it to somebody, like, hey, you should watch this. Here's what happens. But I'm not going to tell you everything, but maybe enough to entice you.
So it is in the leading of Roman Holiday for you, this sort of...
It's not like... So I would say... So I have my all-time favorites from this era of Hollywood. I would say it's in the second...
Okay.
Tier. Like, it top is level second. It's tier. Almost in the first, but it's it's up there. But yeah, that kind of leads perfectly into why I picked it. Not only is it like holiday adjacent, we were kind of getting into it a little bit earlier, but this is an era you're not very familiar with. And I know there is a reputation about movies, like they're all so happy-go-lucky and they're all so cheesy and the dialogue's unbearable and the plot's unbearable and like it's like, oh, this is awful, and like kind of like what, like, I don't know if you know what Hallmark Christmas movies are, but that's a big thing over here, and they're unwatchable. Sorry, everybody, they are unwatchable. And I think this type of movie from this era gets that reputation, but there are movies like this. There are movies like Roman Holiday where it's like, this is so different than what you're expecting. This is so different than most movies of that time. But also, this movie is considered to be one of the greatest movies ever made. The Sight and Sound list of 2022 just came out a couple weeks ago. So Sight and Sound is a list that comes out every 10 years. This year, they had over 1,600 film critics, scholars, people from the industry, I think, and they vote. They only get 10 votes, and they vote for their 10 movies that they think are the most important movies of all time. So The Apartment, I think, has been on it since the very beginning. I forget when this all started. Maybe like in the, I don't know, way back when. Well, like, you know, so... The Apartment was on it again this year, number 54, but it's also on the AFI, which is the American Film Institute list for top 100 movies, and it's 93, which feels kind of low. And then it's also in the Library of Film, like Congress, or like the Library of Congress for Film. So every year, our Congress selects 25 movies that are considered like the top movies of American culture and cinema and things like that. And every year they pick 25. I forget when this got inducted, but this has been in there for a while. The list actually for that just came out today for this year's picks. Iron Man was actually on it. I was really excited to see that. Yeah. So that was really fun. Also, When Harry Met Sally, which I thought was already in there, but we'll get into When Harry Met Sally a little bit later down the road with this movie. But so this movie also won Best Picture. Fun fact, I just found this out today. I didn't know this. This is the last black and white movie to win Best Picture until 1993. Do you know what won in 1993?
Sure. Schindler's List.
Yeah. So also shout out to Spielberg.
You were surprised I knew that, didn't you?
Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. He directed both in the same year. Like, get out of here. Like,
it's got a little girl in a red coat, Schindler's List. So is it fully black and white?
There's not fully, but... The majority of the film is
I was being a bit
and then in 2000
I'll accept it's a black and white
and then 2011 The Artist also wins Best Picture, but that's a homage to silent film and the old era of Hollywood, so that's why that movie's in black and white. But Billy Wilder also directed this, and I wanted to talk about him a little bit. He is one of the most prominent directors of this time. So he directed one of my favorite movies of all time, which I've mentioned before.
Let me guess
podcast,
it.
Which is
Sabrina.
Yeah, it's Sabrina.
That's Audrey Hepburn.
Sabrina is with Humphrey Bogart, Audrey Hepburn, William Holden, and that is up in the top tier with Roman Holiday. Mm-hmm. And he also directed Sunset Boulevard, also Some Like It Hot. Yeah, so those are like some of the biggest movies ever. But he's very comedic, known for his comedic movies, and especially for this time. And we'll get a little bit more into the comedic performances, specifically Jack Lemmon in this. And So Billy Wilder is very prominent. Jack Lemmon is a huge star at the time. I don't think a lot of people know who he is now. I think most people maybe our age know him from Grumpy Old Men, if you've ever seen
that. I just know his name as one of the, it's the Simpsons jokes, one of the original Odd Couple. Mm-hmm. I know he's in the Odd Couple with Walter Matthau, isn't he? Mm-hmm. That's how, yeah.
Yeah, and they did Grumpy yeah. Old Men together yeah. too, yeah. And then Shirley MacLaine, who isn't a lot of things. She's still around. She's still doing movies. She did a Christmas movie a couple years ago with Bill Hader. It's on Disney Plus if you want to watch it. It's called Noel. It's just okay, but she's in it if you want to watch it.
With Anna Kendrick.
Yeah. And then, so this is like Shirley MacLaine up and coming too. So just a big movie. Well-loved, I would say, for movie lovers and people that are really hardcore into movies. So I just really wanted to see if it was going to have the same impact on you. So that was a mouthful, and that's why I picked this
one. That is a very thorough reason. Don't be counting on me to have a really good reason like that next week. But I like the way that you've set me up that so that if I don't like it, I'm clearly not a movie lover. So well done.
You look like a
fool. You win. Checkmate. Godspeed. I'm kind of wondering what is from how you've talked about it there and how well received this film is, like, why is it thought to be so integral part of American culture? That bit was the thing that struck me. What mm-hmm. is it that is so innately American about this, then, would you say? Do you have an answer for that? Because I know I've just thrown really big question at you.
I think it's just about, like, this new concept of putting yourself first, okay. and what's actually best for mm-hmm. you, and what's healthiest for you, and, like, you know, what you do impacts others. You might not, like, realize that at first, but, you know, like, any little thing you do could be changing the life of someone else, and just being self-aware of that. I think it's bringing a new idea to the forefront. Maybe I'm thinking a little bit too much about the plot here, but I also think if we're gonna go, like, more broad, I think these are just two standout performances from Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine that are just 100% genuine. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that it's Billy Wilder, just an icon, you know, like Some Like It Hot is on all these lists too. Yeah. Like, it's not just, you know, it's not like he's just known for one movie or whatever, but I think it might have just surprised people mm-hmm. too. I think what I love about this movie, and this goes into the expectations things where you think, oh, it's just going to be a cliche romance, but there is some sadness and darkness to this. And I mean, there is some, not as much, but there is some sadness in Roman Holiday. And I love that these movies were brave enough to do something different in a time where not everybody else or every other movie was doing mm-hmm. that. So I think it's so different, like, not now, but at the time, sure. it just stands out.
62 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, should we get into the film itself? Thanks for that, though. That's really, you know what? I struggle with the context a lot. And I talk about problematic 80s films and with such love. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously a context issue with those as well. And so I'm trying to kind of put my brain into that sort of zone, that sort of time sphere. So that helps. Thanks.
Well, I think the best way to go about it is just talk about it in chronological order. We don't have to talk about everything, but I think we should just talk about things that we...
Well, fine. That's not how I've organized really my notes, but fine. And we, you know, we did have a conversation before about how we'd organized our notes, but that's fine.
Oh my gosh. But I just think, like, because it's kind of like Pride and Prejudice, where if we start out how it ends, it kind of ruins talking about the beginning.
It's a romantic comedy. We know how it ends.
Well, I mean, Roman Holiday doesn't end like this, and it makes me devastated every time I watch it.
But that's a difference. So let me put it to you. That's mm-hmm. a slightly different... It's the flip side of Roman Holiday, in that in Roman Holiday, the two main characters spend a lovely day together, and then there's mm-hmm. sadness. Mm-hmm. And in this, they have terrible times together. And then there's a microcosm mm-hmm. of happiness at the end. So it's a bit of a flip, isn't it, of that?
Yeah.
Just come up with that. Yeah. Just realize that.
It's odd for me because I normally sad endings are my favorite.
Yeah, you're catnip.
I really love the ending to this movie. I can't help but smile at the end of this movie. Yeah. Mm. So we'll get more into it. But I think we should just start off with, so yeah, we do meet Jack Lemmon, Cece Baxter, and I did watch this on DVD. We got a brand new TV a couple, I don't know, just like about a month ago, and I wasn't sure how my DVD would look, but it actually looked really good. So very happy with that. I just have to start off with that, like, man, I just love Jack Lemmon so much. Like, I just think he is utterly adorable and charming, and there is something so special about him in this movie, but he also feels like a real person. And he has just gotten himself into this predicament of lending out his apartment, you know, getting himself sick, being out all night, getting the wrong key back, you know, just so he can make more money and, like, live a life. And you feel for him because, you know, like, yeah, how else is he going to move up in the world? He's not.
That was one of my questions, because I couldn't work out really why he was doing it. And because he never really seemed like he was that bothered about promotion. He stayed late after work to do some stuff, but that's only because he couldn't go home because people were bonking in his flat. So it didn't come across as necessarily super ambitious. And part of me wondered if this is just a guy who couldn't say no to people. And I think that's a huge element, isn't it? It's like, I don't think he's necessarily super. I don't think he's like Machiavelli, like, you know, and this is a strategic plan to get promoted. I think he's ended up in this situation. He can't say no. What can I get out of it? Oh, maybe I'll get promoted to whatever he gets promoted to, second administrative assistant.
What I also love about this movie is, especially with our two main characters, what they think they want isn't really what they want. And they have to learn valuable lessons and things about themselves to change that mindset. But he does explain... I think you only watched this once, but he does explain how it all started, how some guy just randomly needed his apartment one time. And then he went into the office the next day and told a bunch of executives. And then they were like, oh, Baxter, we can't.
Yeah, so that's where I got like, he can't say no. And then obviously he couldn't say no to Sheldrake either. You know, the big boss.
Yeah, Sheldrake is the big boss. And it's kind of, there is, you know what, I noticed I wasn't laughing as much this time. I was feeling kind of just a little bit somber, but there are some very funny moments. Like, so Baxter gets called up to Sheldrake, who is like the head of the whole company. He gets called up to his office, and it seems like Sheldrake's ready to fire him because he has found out about the apartment. It just turns out Baxter is not following along. Like, he is laying down every clue he can give that he wants to use his apartment, and it's just going over his head, like, left and right. And like, you know, him being like, I have tickets to the music band, but aren't you taking, are we going to the music band together? And he's like, and then like that, just, I just think Jack Lemmon is so funny.
It's quite a physical performance, isn't it? It's quite a physical.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God.
In contrast to, say, Fran's performance, which is not physical comedy. Let me just say that right now. But I like the way the Sheldrake manages to get him to understand by just saying, one of your supervisors says you're very astute. And it's just like, come on, put it together, mate. Put it together. We're all putting it together after 2 seconds, Baxter.
But I love it that it doesn't feel like forced comedy. It just feels like he really is not getting it. And he's like so worried he's going to get fired. And that's like his thought. And that's the bubble he can't get out of his head. And then when it dawns on him, it's really funny. But I like that even right before he gets to Sheldrake is the first time we meet Fran. So Fran's played by Shirley MacLaine, and she's the elevator operator. And you just see how cute they are together. Like, she says, you're the only one that ever takes your hat off in the elevator. He actually calls her Miss, and I can't think of her last name right now off the top of my head.
Begins with a K, but they ends call with each a K.
Other, yeah, yeah. Miss and then Mr. They call it, like, the, you know, their proper introductions to each other. And then the way she gives him her flower... he's like, you're like, you always wear a flower, and all the things he notices about her. And you can tell that he really likes her, and he has for a while. And she, you don't know how she feels, but you can tell she noticed things about him too. You know, like I said, like, he takes his hat off.
Yeah. And she appreciates like him as a person, perhaps a good person in a 30,000 plus filled office, as we find out. Yeah. I like their dynamic. But, you know, when they are all sort of meet, when they have those first initial conversations, she does not seem super interested in him as a romantic boyfriend. I will, I, Yeah.
Yeah. So Sheldrick wants to use his apartment, and he gives Baxter these Music Man tickets, so he has something to go do while he's at his apartment. And he is, you know, another thing he doesn't really seem to pick up on right away, and maybe it's not as obvious, but he runs into Fran, and they're walking out of the building together, and he's like, do you want to go see the Music Man with me? And she's like, I got to go talk to an old boyfriend. You know, we're trying to end things. It's complicated, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, and then she kind of gives him a little bit of false hope, and she's like, well, I could meet you later. And then sure enough, you know, he goes to Music Man. She goes to the restaurant to meet Sheldrake, and you find out that that is his mistress that he's going to take to Baxter's.
But what about Baxter? Before that, he's got a cold because he's been out all night in the rain, yeah. And he's sniffling away at his desk, and he pulls out a mercury thermometer from his pocket. Who has a mercury thermometer in their pocket? And then he's got like
that was a big thing. Over
and
here.
Then he's got like this high fever, and he even tells. He tells Fran, oh, I've got this high fever. He said it in American, so I didn't understand how high it was. But then he still asks her out on a date for that night. Imagine asking somebody out on a date when you've got a high fever. And then imagine that person going, yeah, all right then. I'll go on a date with you, with your snotty germs. And then when they have this little chat, and she's like, I forget what she says. Oh, this is where I live or whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know. What do you mean? Oh, I've read all the information about you in your employee file. I know your social security number. I know where your dad lives or whatever. I'm like, Fran, run. Run, Fran. He would be fired on the spot for that these days. Rightly. Baxter is a very, very, I was going to say low grade. He's not low grade. He's an actual stalker.
There's something about the performance that makes it endearing.
I did not find that endearing.
The time period this movie comes from, that's pretty typical.
Yeah, I think that's what I get. It's pretty typical. I mean, and Fran has spent a lot of time laughing these sorts of things off, hasn't she? So she's been laughing a lot of things off, and I think she's laughing that bit off there because I was kind of sitting there going, oh, she's getting a lot of shit from these fellas in the first 15 minutes of this film. But then she did respond to getting slapped on the ass by threatening to chop off some guy's hand in the lift. So I was like, okay, good. We've established that this is not appropriate behavior. Yeah, so I was kind of like trying to figure it out. Like, is it appropriate behavior? Is this what people would say was okay in the 60s? Because obviously it wouldn't fly now, but we established it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not appropriate behavior.
Well, I will say, too, one other thing. It was kind of funny because I was watching some scenes of this today, and Dan has watched this once with me, but it had been a while. And he was, like, commenting on one of the other women in this movie. And I was like, well, yeah, they all talk like that with that New York, we're going to go out drinking. And I was like, I think that's intentional, though, for this movie, because they wanted to show how different Fran is from everyone else. She doesn't talk like that. She doesn't act like that. There's a couple different women in this movie that, like, Miss Olsen, the secretary, is a little bit different. The doctor's wife is a little bit different. But almost every other woman in this movie has that, like, typical, like, or stereotypical New York annoying
I really felt Fran seemed really contemporary, like in her portrayal and how she was. And I sort of said she doesn't do physical comedy like Baxter does, but that was good. I didn't want her doing physical comedy. We had enough of that with Baxter doing it. But she had a very short haircut, you know, which people commented on. She was very composed in her manner and just didn't seem. Some of the things sometimes I struggle with old films, I think I've said before, is like how people talk so fast and just like kind of everything seems to be a quip at the end of a sentence, but she was just talking like a normal, regular person would at the same rate and tone. You and I are having this conversation now. And it felt like she was like somebody had predicted what people would be like in 62 years time. And that was her. I could see her in a modern day film, that performance.
And I think like it is all intentional because like this is why he likes her. She's so different from everything else.
Yeah,
you know
who
what I mean?
Like
he's immediately drawn to her. And she is very funny too. Like even her little hand motions when she's pointing or like, you know, and she's very sarcastic and she's very witty. She's very smart. And I love that, you know, like not every movie in this era too had like really strong female characters leads to, and she is independent in her own way. We'll get a little bit more into that. I mean, I know, like, there's some things that happen that maybe you would say she's not, but,
well, I
you
think
know, humans are going to feel things that they're going to feel, like, you know what
I mean? Yeah. And I think, so. are we talking about Fran's affair? Is that what we're talking about?
So I just want to first mention, is Mr. Sheldrake the most vile movie villain of all time?
Do you know, I was watching him and I was going, is this a young J.K. Simmons? He was an odd bod, wasn't he? I don't know how to feel about him. Well, I know how to feel about him, but, like, there's no... I was sat there in my comfy chair the other night watching this film, and I'm thinking, Fran, what are you seeing in this guy? And I thought that about every single woman in this movie. Why are you all having sex with these old men in this guy's apartment? What is the gain here from this? And you can't all, you know, it's not always love. I know Franz did say she loved Sheldrake, which I don't know how that happened. How did that happen?
But you know what? Like, he definitely manipulated her. He definitely told her the same message. I mean, how many times did he say he was going to leave his wife for
and then laugh it off
and stuff just to get what he wanted? And she's a lot younger than him. And yeah, you know what? Like, back in the day, that was the thing. Like, you met somebody and 3 months later you got married. So that's what's expected of her. So that's what she's just trying to do. And, you know, she wants security. There's security in this man. He has, like, an important job, you know. There, like, love was such a different thing back then that I can understand, like, why she fell for him. I don't find this man charming or attractive in any way, but if I were in Fran's position, I wasn't seeing it from an outside perspective, I can see how this all happened, you know. And your heart just immediately breaks for her because you see what he's really like with Baxter, but you see what he's like with Fran, and you know she's not getting the truth ever from him. He's just getting what he wants out of it, and he is just he's awful. He's awful to everybody in this movie, and I just think I'm glad he's so bad because, like, you just don't like him, and it's such a clear villain. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
It's funny, I didn't... Screw this guy. It's funny, I didn't think about it in those terms, like, him being a villain. I think I wrote down, are all men shitheads? And you know, I didn't kind of think about it in those, such a kind of clear way that he is the villain of the movie,
But I also, like, you know, most of the men in this movie... with a few exceptions, it's kind of the same thing as the women in this movie. They all act a certain way, but Baxter doesn't. So that's what is so appealing about Baxter, is he is so different from everyone else, too. So they both, Baxter and Fran, they both stand out for, they're better than everyone. They're legitimately good people, just in bad circumstances that, you know, like, they have gotten themselves stuck in. And it's easy to like them both immediately and to root for them. So I think that's important to have. And I think they're both, it's very effective from both of them in this movie. Baxter, unfortunately, never gets to see Fran at the Music Man. And he goes back to his apartment after they have spent their time there or whatever. And he finds a mirror. And when he opens the mirror is cracked in half. And he knows that the next day he's going to give it to Sheldrake to give back to whomever he's seeing or whatever. But this mirror is so important to remember. Obviously, I mean, you see that mirror and you're like, okay, this is going to come back one way or another. And you're just kind of waiting for the ball to drop. Now, were you like, oh God, like, when is he going to find, like, were you nervous for him? Like, when he was going to find out that the mirror belonged to him?
Yeah, maybe, or? I guess maybe nervous is too strong a word. I knew his heart was going to break in that moment. And I knew there was going to be an impact. So you sort of, braced for it. I think they delivered it really well. I think
it's like one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Really clearly, didn't it?
I love that scene so much because not only is his heart broken, but Fran has just found out from Sheldrake's secretary that she used to have an affair with him, and then she goes through the list of all the women in the office he's had an affair with and how he's told all of them that he was going to leave his wife for them or whatever. But what I like about her, so her name is just Miss Olson, the secretary. She's not doing it maliciously. She's just genuinely like, I want you to be careful because I went through this and I've seen other women go through this. And she's, you know, it's like a genuine, like, I'm looking out for
you. Yeah, it's not malicious, but she is drunk. And so maybe the kind of the thresholds have been lowered and her inhibitions have gone. And she's just like, fuck it. I'm just going to tell you, you know, you need to watch out for it. Because she's been kind of eyeing them up for a little bit, hasn't she?
And so Fran's heart is now literally broken in half because, again, she has fallen victim to, like, I'm going to leave my wife and we're going to be together, blah, blah, blah. And so Baxter, you know, it's the holiday Christmas party. He's trying to get her to, like, have fun, drink a little bit. He's trying to get her to go out that night and everything. He wants her to look at this hat that he's bought, you know, and he's trying to be really cute about it. He's
what
trying,
about when he tries trying. That hat on? He look that oh, stare yeah. he gives her. I was like,
yeah.
What are you going for there? What are you going for there, Bax? A creepy and intense with a bowler hat.
And so what she does is she's like, here, you can take a look yourself. And she gives him the mirror. And his face, as soon as he opens it, you just feel it. But you feel the heaviness because both of their hearts are broken in that moment. And the realization, like, she doesn't know everything he does just yet, but how sad he is. And then I just love the line where he's like, and she's like, well, what's wrong? She knows something's up when he looks at the mirror, and he just says, it's the crack. And she's like, well, I like it that way. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like the mirror that way. And I love that line too, because she doesn't see how amazing she is just yet. And you can kind of tell too that she's down on herself. Maybe that is why she's with somebody like with Sheldrake. Yeah. You know what
or
I mean?
Or I kind of took it like she doesn't know who she is. You know, there's these two different versions of her, isn't there? There's the person that she feels she is, and then there's the person that she is actually being, you know, the mistress to this guy that is probably not going to end well, but she doesn't feel she's that person. And she's, you know, she's not really, you know, character, I suppose, is the actions that we do. But, you know, it's a bit like Scrooge in the last story. There's always time to set a life right, isn't there? Well, I want to describe something. When you were talking about the moment Baxter's heart broke and Fran was having a crisis after she'd found out she wasn't the first girl, your face was beaming. You were smiling and you were looking up to the heavens. And it's such a funny thing to see how you had that, you had the negative emotion connected with the scene. But because you thought it was so beautiful, what it did to your face and how it made you feel.
You know what? Like, it's funny. Like, I didn't realize I was doing that in the time. But, you know,
noticeably doing it.
That scene is just one of those movie scenes that you're like, that is why I love movies. I love the way this is filmed. I love the way it's being acted. It is something that made me feel something that I will never forget the first time seeing that scene. And it is a scene that, you know, maybe if I don't watch this movie for the next 15 years and I forget what all happens, I won't forget that scene. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that will stick with me for the rest of my life. And that's why I think I love movies, because there's just, it doesn't have to be the whole movie, but there can be certain things that it's just like, this was so well done that this has just changed so much for me. And that scene, I think, is one of the greatest scenes ever in a movie, just because I really have to give it to Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine, because I don't know, like, how I don't know anybody else that could do that. Well, the way.
Yeah,
like, there is something very special about these
and
two.
It's quite a clever, it's a clever device, isn't it? You know, it's a clever way to do it. It's not just you've walked in on somebody or you've seen them together. You know, there's subtlety to it. It's a lot of it is conveyed by the performances, and it's in the middle of this office party where there must be so much syphilis flying around in this office party. People are just making out willy-nilly. Some woman stands up on a table and I think she's genuinely going to start stripping. This is everybody who she works with, and she's about to take her clothes off. And I'm going, I'm just like, I'm discombobulated by all these things going on around them, and then their little hearts are breaking over in his window office.
He just up and leaves. Everyone's like, it's the Christmas party. What are you doing? And he can't. So he goes to a bar to go drink himself drunk, basically. You
know, I was watching that scene when he goes to the bar, just drinks himself drunk. And I was a bit sad. I was a bit like, I don't think I've ever really just gone to a bar by myself and just sat there and drunk myself drunk, drink myself drunk all night. Yeah. Felt like I'd missed out there. Maybe that's not what I should be feeling.
I will say though, like, he's in the right city to do it. We're New York. It's Christmas Eve on New York, or in New York, that's the city where there's so many people, you're really not drinking alone. You know, that Santa guy was in there. That really funny lady, you know.
Buy me a drink, I'll buy you some music. That lady.
Oh my God, I love it.
And she puts on, "Oh, come all ye faithful," on the jukebox.
I do love when she's blowing the straw wrappers at him and he's just so out of it. He could care less. And then she just comes over.
I liked her. She was good value.
Oh, she was funny. And then you get so Fran and
Sheldrake.
Sheldrake, they're at Baxter's apartment, and it's kind of the same thing where it's just like, oh, this is not going well. She tells him that she knows everything, and he finally is like, well, what did you expect me to do? Just like leave my family? And she's like, yeah, that's what you told me you were gonna do. But what it really just goes downhill when she's like, I got you something for Christmas, and it's a record from a restaurant, from a piano player from a restaurant they would always go to. And he's at first like, I think, touched by the gesture, but then he's like, well, we'll leave it here. And you're like, oh, this is not good. And then it just gets worse. He's like, I got you something, but I forgot it. But here's $100. Mm-hmm. And she just, obviously, she feels like a sex worker in that moment. She feels like that's all she is. And I mean, really, honestly, that is all she is for him. He can lie all he wants, but that's all that's all it is for him. And I think she just hits rock bottom at that point. And it is so sad
to see, because I think when she kind of gets that $100, and then I couldn't quite work out what she was doing at first, but then she kind of robotically sort of stands up and starts to kind of undress as well. And I was like, oh, it was so, I don't know. I felt scared, I think, you know, as to what was going to happen next. Thankfully, he just buggered off.
And so, unfortunately, like, he just leaves her there because he's got to get back to his family, you know? And she doesn't know it's Baxter's apartment just yet, but she starts, like, I think she's, like, washing her face or cleaning her face or something, and she finds the sleeping pills, and you're just kind of like, oh, no. But what this movie does do, so there is a lot of sadness in it, but it will bounce you back with some humor. So Baxter comes to his apartment with the lady from the bar. They were there till closing, so they're both drunk and whatnot. But also, like, before all this, you know, Baxter has this nice doctor neighbor who's always like, you're going to give yourself a heart attack how you are with these women. So Baxter has never told, obviously, anybody, like his landlady, the doctor's wife, anybody, like, what is actually going on. They just all think he is, like, a ladies' man, which he finds flattering because he's like, I can't believe you think a guy like, yeah. He was like, yeah, I can't believe you think a guy like me would be a ladies' man. So he's got this drunk lady from the bar, and she is very, very loud. And they go back into the apartment, and that's when he notices there's a coat still there. And he goes into his bedroom, and Fran is on the bed. And I actually really like this scene where he's drunk, and he's kind of confessing how he feels about her. And he's like, you know, I really liked you, and I can't believe you did this to me. Like, but, like, you know, he's just drunk saying that. But once he realizes something's wrong, he kind of sobers up, and you see that he still feels that way about her. He's genuinely concerned and upset about this. And then he has to go get the doctor. But what I also like about this is, like, the doctor's like, well, why did this happen? How did this happen? Who's that? Like, you know, he kicks out the drunk lady. And Baxter takes the blame for everything to, unfortunately, protect Sheldrake, but to protect Fran, too.
That was the other thing. I'm like, I can never quite work out Baxter's motives. Like, who is he? Who is he doing it for? Like, who is he trying to protect there? Mm-hmm. Because there was this thing where the doctor was like, "I'm going to have to report this as well." So it seemed like a suicide attempt needed some kind of further, I don't know, investigation or something. And he manages to convince him not to do it. So, like, I thought, well, is it to protect Fran? But I think the reality it was to protect Sheldrake more than anything.
But I do think it is also for Fran too, because if he explains the situation. That, oh, she is, she works with me, but she's sleeping with this married man. It's not Sheldrake that gets frowned upon in that situation. It's Fran that gets frowned upon in that situation. And he's also protecting her reputation.
That makes
sense. I like that. he does this continuously where he just says, like, yep, it's my fault. I'm mm-hmm. the jerk, you know, and he's willing to take, like, the judgments and the punches that happen because
and
of
how
this,
about that doctor?
Know?
I'm not sure that's textbook medicine, is it? Just coming around to the house, making her be sick. I don't know what he did to make her be sick. But then just pours piping.
They pumped her stomach.
Pours piping hot coffee into her mouth on numerous occasions and then slaps her, paintbrushes her across her face. And he's just like, right, we're just going to have to walk around this room for the next 5 hours. I'm like, I don't think that's how they teach it in medical school, mate. Why have you not gone to the hospital? Just get her to the hospital.
I mean, this would explain a lot of this country and why it is the way that it is now, if that's what that used to be, how you handled things. But I do, it's hard to watch her getting slapped, but I like seeing Baxter's reaction to it because he's having a difficult time. Not only because of, like, he feels horrible for where she's at and what she did, but he can't watch that as well, too. And you can just see how much she means to him. But I really like that this doctor kind of sets everything in motion for a wake-up call for Baxter, where he's like, you know, you can't treat people like this, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah. And Baxter's realizing, like, me lending out my apartment is doing this not only to Fran, but to other women, to other families. And it kind of starts the ball, like, that he needs to start standing up for himself and for these people and not letting people walk all over him. Yeah, the doctor, I can't think of who the actor is, but he actually got an Oscar nomination. Oh, wow. So Shirley MacLaine, Jack Lemmon, and the doctor all got an Oscar nomination.
I would not have thought
and
that.
I'm always surprised. Yeah, I'm always surprised when I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right, the doctor did. But he, you know, I think he is a good, like, mover of everything. Like, he gets, like I said, the ball rolling for, like, a wake-up call. For
yeah,
Baxter.
He moves,
like,
people on to different, to the next place they need to be. Mm. Mm-hmm. And his wife does a little bit the next day.
Yeah.
With Fran in bed, yeah.
Yeah. So they do say Fran, she does not die. She is not well, though. So the next day is Christmas. And you, it is still a little sad because, like, she, when she finally does wake up and realizes, like, where she is and everything, she's like, I gotta go. And he's like, you can't go anywhere, you know, like, and he's like, but, like, what else was I gonna do on Christmas? And you kind of realize how lonely Baxter is. Like, he didn't have family or anywhere to go. Like, Fran's really all he has for Christmas. And, you know, then he starts taking care of her and you really see how much she means to him. And she kind of starts seeing, like, this different side of Baxter in that moment too. But is there anything you want to add to, like, her being there for, like, the next couple
of
days?
I think probably my favorite shot in the film was when I think she was alone in the apartment and Michelle Drake was on the phone and she was about to go and answer the phone or speak to him on the phone, and, like, the telephone was in the foreground and she was off in the background, and you could just feel the weight of her decision to go and speak to him. And, you know, I really loved that. That was really beautiful in that moment. I don't know. I think it was just all funny, like, oh, you've just got to stay here, you don't want to get Mr. Sheldrake in trouble. I still felt Baxter was really protecting Sheldrake mostly, but you have explained it to me, like, how he was also, I get that now, like, I probably didn't see it when I was watching it, how much he was sort of for Fran as well, like, if it got out she was just having an affair with a married man and what that would do.
Unfortunately, like, at that time, like, Fran's reputation, once it's ruined, it's ruined. You know, she probably would have had to quit that job. Who knows, like, what would have happened after that. And, like, where Sheldrake, it's a man's world, and it's
clearly, it's a man's world.
It's just, like, I think it is as much to protect her as it is Sheldrake. It's to protect both of them. But I do like that. I like that you brought up the phone and her in the foreground, like, or background or whatever, before she goes to answer it. This movie is a comedy. It has some very light music to it, but there is some, like, there, that music that kicks in at that scene is very, like, dread, and heavy, like you were saying. And it's really, like, odd to hear it in a movie like this, but it's so smart to have it because it's like, yeah, well, what is going to happen? But I also like that this conversation she has with him on the phone, because we just find out, like, he has come back into the office after Christmas, and he fires Miss Olsen for telling Fran everything, which, scumbag of the year. Like, you're the scumbag, not your secretary.
That
okay.
Would not, I think an investigation into that severance would not go well for Mr. Sheldrake. Yeah.
But I do love what happens is she is upset about losing her job and all of this stuff, but she listens to the phone call. And after she hears what Fran did and that he is the reason she did that, she calls his wife and says, we need to go get lunch. And I absolutely, like, yes. Okay, yes, Miss Olsen, yes, you did it. I am so happy right now. Like, I'm just so happy right now. And that kind of propels where, like, his wife finds out and he gets kicked out of the house. And
he frames it maybe slightly differently at one point, but then, says he was kicked out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do want to add one thing before Fran leaves the apartment when her brother-in-law comes to pick her up. How cute the is making spaghetti with a
really unhygienic. I'm not sure Fran was impressed. I don't know.
But it's so iconic. I think that is the shot from the movie. Like when people are like, oh, the apartment, remember when he makes the spaghetti with the tennis racket? And it's just so cute. But she seems very you made me dinner. Mm-hmm. And like, that's so sweet. And like, kind of what a mess and what a bachelor he is that like he's, because she, even earlier, she's like, why is a tennis racket in your kitchen? And he's like, you know, I string spaghetti with it. And when you get to actually see him do it, it's just so cute. I don't know. It's, yeah, like, I don't know if I'd eat the spaghetti, but like, it's just so cute to see. But yeah, Fran, she lives with her sister and her brother-in-law, and she hasn't been home for a couple of days, and he goes to the office to try to find out where she is. And some of the executives haven't been able to use the apartment in a couple of days, so they tell, one knows where she is because he tried to use Baxter's apartment on Christmas and saw Fran there. So they let the brother-in-law know, like, oh, we know where she is. And the brother-in-law comes. And I think for a second, Baxter kind of forgets, like, what the whole situation is. Because he's like, man, your sister-in-law is wonderful. She's a great gal. Like, you know, like, not realizing, like, he looks like such a scumlord himself in that moment. And then the doctor comes over and is like, how's the patient? He's like, oh, I'm fine, you know, because he doesn't want the brother-in-law. And then it all comes out like that. She, you know, Fran comes out and she's like, I took sleeping pills. And the brother-in-law is like, why? Why would you do that? Because obviously they don't know anything about this affair she's been having either. And once again, to protect Fran, and this is really to protect Fran, he just says, without hesitation, he's like, it's because of me. And then he gets socked right in the face. And she realizes it's for her because she's like, you fool, you fool. And then she kisses him on top of the head and he's like, worth it. Like, totally worth it. So I just, when you get that too, you really see how much like he's doing this for Fran and not just like everyone else involved. He is really trying to protect Fran at all costs, you know?
I struggled with Baxter a bit in that I kind of really did feel more or less all the way through this film until the very end, he seemed to just be mainly protecting his boss. I felt like that was a real big drive for him, and I think that was because it feels like a boys' club, and you know, that was a thing that was expected of him. I don't think he was particularly interested in being in the boys' club. I don't feel like he was like grabbing ass and trying to do all these different things, but it just, like I said, like felt like he got swept up in it, and that was what was expected of him, and he struggles to say no. I'm glad for this conversation because I definitely think that you have contextualized it more for me, that perhaps I didn't see those other elements to it, though.
That's the other thing I think why some people have trouble with movies from this time is you have to put yourself in the mindset of what that time frame was like to... Not, I'm not talking about, like, historical dramas that get made now in modern times. No, those are something different. I'm talking about things that got made, like, 60, 50 years ago. You have to think about what it was like to be a woman then, what it was like to be like a nobody in a business then.
And I think I'm more than happy to do that. And I think that's the absolute right thing to do. I don't think you can judge a film from the 1960s on today's standards. I just lack the ability to do it, you know, properly. I don't know. I don't know enough about the period, I guess, and American history in the 1960s to really understand it. I think that's my problem here.
Yeah. And I think that's why, like, I want to share more of these with you. So, because, I mean, I wasn't like that at first either. It took more time. And then getting older, too.
Yeah, getting older.
To be like, yeah, this is how you have to, like, think like them to really appreciate what this movie is. And also to appreciate how different this movie is at that time.
Yeah, because it's hard.
What is so special about this movie?
It's hard to do that, isn't it? When I've not seen it before. And, you know, it... It isn't perhaps necessarily different to other movies romantic comedies in certain aspects, in certain ways, it's hard to understand that it was really different. And I think, mm-hmm. yeah, it's why we have these chats, isn't it, Marcy? It's why we have these chats, mm-hmm. and we sort of explain to each other why we really love these films and why they're so special. So this mm-hmm. is a prime example.
Yeah, and so we get like I was saying earlier, why I think this movie is considered one of the best is it is a journey for both of them about realizing their self-value and that it's okay to say no and do what's best for you. And it comes in the form of, you know, Sheldrake has all of his like luggage in his office because his wife has kicked him out. And he's like, well, yeah, I'm going to be with Fran now. And he's like posing it like that's what he wanted to do. But really, it's because he has nowhere mm-hmm. else to go. And he wants to use the apartment one more time. And Baxter just puts his foot down finally. But you don't realize that at first. Yeah. Because I love how it's framed where he gives mm-hmm. him a key. And he's like, thank you. Okay, great. I got what I wanted. And then Baxter. But then you're like, well, why is Baxter putting his coat on? And then Sheldrake comes in. And he's like, he gave me the washroom key. He's like, I know. I did. I'm quitting. Like, and he finally stands up for himself. He finally stands up. Yeah. And he finally stands up for Fran. And he just is like, enough is enough. Like, he realizes, like, everything that he's been doing and what an impact it's been having on everybody. And also himself. And that it's just like, this is what I thought I wanted, but it isn't what I want at all.
It takes him the whole film. I mean, that's yeah. you know what? That's, yeah. and I don't mean that as a slight. I found that interesting that, like, there wasn't mm-hmm. a moment before, about 3 minutes before this film finished, that he didn't have that realization. And that was a kind of a different way this film was structured. Because normally you'd have something in the final act, wouldn't you, where they kind of have their moment where everything comes mm-hmm. clear and they change their attitude or whatever. But it really was like the last sort of few minutes when he made his decision and mm-hmm. changed his mind.
Then we get Baxter, you know, back at the apartment, and he just wants it all to be in the past, and he's packing up his stuff, and he's going to move out. So while that is all going on, we see Fran is with, you know, Sheldrake, and they're at their typical restaurant that they would always go to. And, you know, he hasn't told her the full story, but he's just like, yeah, I'm leaving my wife officially, like, really, to be with you and stuff. So what I like is that she finally has what she thought she wanted, and they're talking, and I forget how he phrases it, but he's like, well, we're going to have to find somewhere to go because Baxter wouldn't give me the key. And like a light bulb
yeah,
goes off.
That was it, wasn't it? Yeah.
And she's like, he didn't give you the key? And she realizes
he specifically said Mrs. I forget her flipping name. Fran couldn't.
Yeah. yeah.
Fran was not to be allowed into the apartment. And, oh, he specifically yeah. said I wasn't allowed in there. You know, I think it was all yeah. that sort of penny drops.
And I just love that it's like, so it's officially like New Year's, everyone's singing. Sheldrake turns around really quick to sing with everybody else. And when he turns back around, she's just gone. And I love the scene of her running down the street. And one thing that happens a little bit earlier in the film, you know, after she tries to take her life the first time, the doctor warns Baxter, like, she's likely to do this again. Be careful. There's a scene where, like, he comes home from the grocery store and the landlady's like, I smelled gas in your apartment. And he rushes to the door, like, to make sure she's okay and she's not trying to do anything. So we get kind of that here, where she runs into the apartment, we hear a pop, she thinks it's a gunshot, it's a champagne bottle. But I like that it's like you see how much he means to her. You know what I mean? Like, she would not be panicking and freaking out that much if he didn't mean what he did to her. And I love this ending so much because she just comes in. They were playing cards while she was there for a couple of days or whatever.
She and was they very just kinda, disinterested, you know, in that card game.
Yeah, but they pick it back up. And I just love him being like, I adore you. I love you. Like, I think you're amazing. And she's like, shut up, Indio. Like, it's just so cute and sweet. And it's actually like a really cute, happy ending where they end up together. And I just wanted to mention again, When Harry Met Sally, they definitely took that ending from that movie from this movie, because that movie ends on New Year's and it's almost basically the same thing, except for it's Billy Crystal going to Meg Ryan instead of, you know, the girl going to the guy. But yeah, what did you think of the ending?
What I liked especially about the ending was that when he said, I love you, she didn't say it back. because that to me would have been too much of a stretch. Because, you know, I don't think she loves him. I mean, she's never once throughout the film sort of really made never made any sort of romantic statements about him. You know, there's been some affection, but I don't think it's been romantic affection. He's obviously like swooning all over her. Well, and he says, I love you. But she just smiles and just sits next to him and they just carry on a conversation. And I like that because one of the things I didn't quite like about his girl Friday was the resolution there, which I felt, I think we talked, I won't say what happens in that film at the end, just in case, but it just felt very quick in a certain aspect. Yeah. And I was really glad that, because all the way through, like I said, she's felt measured, she's felt considered, and she didn't, she didn't rush in and bumble a statement just at the end, and she was true. She was true to the character that she'd been throughout the film. So I really liked it, and I liked that a lot.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And that is so ahead of its time. Just like I feel like the Roman holiday ending is so ahead of its time. So I think that's why movies like that, where you're getting like the same movie, like one out of 20 is different, maybe even more than that. And that's why those movies are the ones people remember. This is why it's considered one of the greatest movies of all time. So that is The Apartment. Anything else you want to talk about the movie? Anything else you want to bring
up? No, I don't think so. We've had a good old chinwag about that, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. I actually had a really fun time talking about it because I do really love this movie. I think it is very special.
I don't think, I was going to say, I don't think we've done an episode like this for a little while, have we? Where often, I think sometimes, it's not so much a, I don't know, discussion where we need to explain to each other why we've liked certain bits. But there have been definitely been times when I was watching it and I was thinking, I don't quite get this. I don't quite fully understand, because I saw a lot of positive reviews and all these different things. And I must admit, it didn't fully click. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And I had a good time watching it. But not to the kind of, this is one of the most important films that's ever been made level. And so to have a conversation with you who feels that way and to find out why, which was, like saying that's why we're doing it, is to find out these little bits. It's been brilliant. That's what we wanted to do from the get-go.
Oh, very cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that at least. Like, sometimes when I watch something, I don't, like, get it at first, but I want to keep trying to get it. I know you're like, oh, you don't have to, like, always like everything. But there's some movies where it's like, but I'd like to try to understand it a little bit better. And I just love having a different perspective or an idea thrown at me. And it's like, well, what about if you thought about this while you were watching it, or if you looked at it this way? And yeah, sometimes it's changed my mindset about movies, and it's made me love movies that I wanted to love, but didn't maybe get at first. And yeah, you don't have to do that with everything, but if there's something you really want to try again, you know, maybe talk to your friend about it. Maybe talk to somebody about it. Friends. Maybe look at it a different way. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Apart from you. And you're buggering off.
What about Mikey?
He's more of a life partner than a friend.
Okay, that's true. I'm sorry. Well, just overall thoughts. Did you think it was a good movie?
I'll give you more information.
And you enjoyed it?
It was a good movie.
Okay.
I liked the performances. I felt like they were acting in two different films, but that was intentional. Like, Jack Lemmon was in a comedy. You know, Shirley MacLaine was in a tragedy, and the two met somewhere in the middle. So I liked that. I liked how the tone shifted, and it was quite dark in places, like when after the overdose attempt, and he suddenly realizes he's got razors in his bathroom, and it's not made a big song and a dance about it, but he just moves the razors and different things. I liked that there was weight and things mattered, but aren't all men assholes?
I don't think Baxter is, and I don't think the doctor is.
The doctor's,
you know,
not.
There's
he's
exceptions.
All right, isn't he? I think Baxter.
Yeah,
he was pushing it. I think that's one of the things I struggle with. I don't find leading men sometimes redeeming in these films. I feel like they're not necessarily heroic characters, but I suppose they don't have to be heroic characters, do they? Just be real and make choices and make decisions. And he did that.
He was, like you said, like he was in a boys' club. Well, like, I mean, she has expectations of her, but he has expectations too. You want to be like, big honcho in the company, you're going to do this, you know? But that's what I love about this movie is, like, you don't have to be like everybody else. You can do what you want to do and do what you think is right. And, you know, and don't be afraid to stand up for yourself.
You hearing me, baby Marcy? Don't be afraid to stand up for yourself. Yeah, you'll regret saying that to your kid, let me tell you that for nothing. Well, there we go. Anything else that you wanted to say?
Just thank you for watching it. Are you willing?
Am I willing?
So after Roman Holiday, I think you said, okay, I'll give another one a shot. So are you willing to try this again?
I'm always willing. Here? That is the point of this, isn't it? If we're not willing, why are we doing it? I do not want to be an intolerant, grumpy old man. I just want to be a grumpy old man. Okay? I'm willing to watch whatever.
One more quick question. Do you think you'd ever rewatch this? Not like immediately,
certainly not
but
immediately
ever?
Because I haven't got time. I have to have conversations with elves. Yeah, I would. Uh-huh. I'd probably try. Okay. I'd probably watch it with Kate or something. You know, rather I wouldn't necessarily like if I had time to myself. Maybe not.
Yeah. What is nice about watching this, especially when you don't watch movies like this all the time, is that I think this movie is surprising because it's not the blueprint of what most movies were this time.
I get that from you.
So I picked a really good song this week.
So shall I go first?
Everyone knows.
Save the best for last.
I'm just gonna go first because So Ron, who was on a couple episodes ago for the Goonies, he started all this with an email, you know, saying like, "Hey, what's the song that makes you think of this movie?" And we've been doing it ever since. But I actually was really excited for this song. It's called "Just a Boy" by Angus and Julia Stone. And when you listen to it, I think you can just picture Jack Lemmon in this movie.
Oh, interesting.
It's a very cute, endearing song. And it just reminds me of his character in this movie. So that's my pick.
Good. I'm excited to listen to that. But, you know, I said interesting because my pick was inspired by Fran. So gone one for another. Now, on the last episode, we did our sort of favorite off-the-beaten-path Christmas songs. So for this, I thought I'd go a bit more obvious to a song that is probably my favorite song to sing on karaoke, and it is from 1988, A Little Respect by Erasure, because that's what Fran needs. She needs a little respect from Mr. What's his name? Sheldrake and the Sippy Tree at all proper. So that's why I've gone with that song.
Oh, that kind of worked out perfectly then. So.
I didn't know where I was going to go with that song choice, but then that added a little epiphany. And I think it worked quite well. But listen to you.
I'm excited to listen to yours.
You must have heard mine before.
See if I can. If I have, I mean, maybe if I have, I have, but I don't realize it. Like sometimes songs are like I don't know the title, but once I hear it, it's like that's
all. You probably will have heard it. That's all I'll say. Cut that bit out. It's me mumbling.
Okay.
So if you have ever lent out your apartment to your boss so that they can have a game of tiddlywinks while you've been out sitting in a park.
I don't want to know.
Marcy doesn't want to know, so just email me directly. If you've ever got any other stories, why not send them in to us here? Our email address is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. And now I don't mean to kind of put any pressure on you, but we're lucky to have gotten this episode in the can. We've maybe got one more episode coming. If you want your email cemented in the mixtape legacy, for sure, you need to get it in next week. Okay? Because who knows? Who knows how long it'll be before Marcy's dulcet tones grace the podcast airways again. All right? So that's what I'm saying. But if you also like looking at pretty pictures and whatnot, why don't you go and follow us over at Instagram? The_movie mixtape on there, where all awesome art from Mikey P gets posted and all alternate posters. Oh, I wonder if there are many alternate posters to this.
Oh, you know what? Arrow Video has a really cool
Arrow
for this movie. Yeah. Isn't that surprising?
It's been released by Arrow. I'm freaking out about that inside.
I'm pretty sure. Are you going to buy it now?
No. But I am interested in how that came to be. That is an interesting story. But yeah, go and follow us there. And do you know what? If you like this show, don't be worried that this may be a bit of an extended break and stuff like that, because just re-listen to some of the old episodes. Just tell a friend about it, because those episodes aren't going anywhere. They're there forever. They're there for everywhere until somebody comes along and says Marcy's been arrested for federal crimes, and so we have to remove all this content. Okay? But guess what, Marcy? We've got some emails.
Oh, we do? I didn't think we did the way you were talking.
Yeah, I was leading you down a garden path. So I'm going to start reading them out. You might need to chop a little bit out of this conversation, okay?
Oh, gosh.
All right. Okay. First email from Ty from the rankings.
Oh, what? Oh, Ty, hello.
He writes, is there anything really I could say about Billy Wilder's The Apartment that much more intelligent people than me haven't already said? The characters, he's talking about you there, I think, Marcy. The characters, the cinematography, the story, and the script is so beautifully tragic. The line where Shirley MacLaine's character says she carries around a broken mirror because I like it that way makes me look the way I feel. That line cuts me deep every time. But enough about that masterpiece. I'd like to turn my attention to Marcy. Marcy is going to be a mother soon, and I just want to say congratulations to you. You're going to be such a great mom. And instead of going into a whole essay about why, in true rankings fashion, I've made a top five list of why you are. So here it goes.
Oh, no.
Five.
Okay, I'm going to cry.
She's gone. She's gone, Ty. Yes. This kid will grow up with great appreciation for Jeff Goldblum. And that is something that every growing child needs. Four.
Yes, they do.
Because of your amazing friendship, you have already built a community that stretches across the world. Who cares for your child? I think he means the community will care for your child. Number three.
Okay.
You have amazing taste in movies, and your kid will grow up being able to jump into those worlds with you all the time. And I have no doubt you know exactly what age you want to show them Jurassic Park. Two, you're freaking cool. You are definitely going to be the cool mum. And while they might think it's dorky when they are an annoying teenager, they will definitely appreciate that greatly. Number one, and most importantly, you are truly one of the most caring people I know. And I have no doubt in my mind that this kid will grow up adapting all of your best traits. I'm glad to call you a friend, even if you didn't give Top Gun Maverick 5 stars. Congrats, Marcy. What do you think about that?
I'm crying. Like, legitimately crying, Ty. Thank you. That was so lovely. And, Ty, I don't know. Just thank you. Ty and I always mess with each other. That we act like we don't like each other, but Ty's like a little brother to me, and I mean, obviously, like, he changed everything for me. He and Danny, they let me on rankings a long time ago. That's how everything started. We had Ty on earlier this year with Danny. Please listen to that episode. Those guys are wonderful. Please go check out the rankings, their podcast. It's a fun time always. And Ty, I don't know. I'm ugly crying. I hope you're happy with yourself, and I'm going to message you later and be like, thanks a lot for making me cry, buddy.
So, you broke Marcy. Good work.
Yeah, you did.
Another email here from Trainer.
Oh,
hello,
God.
Movie mixtape. It's your boy, Trainer. I'm going to be frank with you. I have not watched the movie this week. It's been on my watch list for so long, but I just did not have the time this week. Instead, I just wanted to write in to say thank you. Thank you both for such a wonderful podcast. Thank you for the smiles and laughs you brought me. Thank you for being daring enough to invite me on. Thank you for being there every week for us to listen to. You both are so wonderful. And I just wanted to make sure you knew that. With so many big things on the horizon, especially with you, Marcy, I'm so excited to see what the future holds. I'm so excited for you and your family and want to wish you all the luck in the world. You've been such an amazing friend, podcast host, and Mima to our communities.
Oh my
we will
God.
Always have your back and love you so much. And you're all right too, Dirk. Thank you both so much for the wonderful gifts you give us each and every week. It has been such an honor to be on the show and to listen to you goofballs talk about some amazing movies. All the best and love, Trainer.
Oh my God. Is this like ugly cry corner for Marcy time? Trainer.
I think they...
my goodness.
Trainer was on the Chicken Run episode, wasn't he?
Chicken Run. Trainer and Chicken Run. They go together.
That was all your engineering, wasn't it?
That was fun, though. Like, give him his platform for Chicken Run. We did it. We were the ones brave enough to
no
do it.
No other podcast
so you're welcome,
could hold Trainer, okay? He's such a force of power in this world. Thanks, trainer. And thanks, you know what? You snuck a nice compliment in there about me. I appreciate that. Thanks very much. I've got another email here. This is from Boom. Hello. Aww. It's me, Boom. Admittedly, I have not seen The Apartment, but we'll be adding it to my watch list. I'm excited to hear the Movie Mixtape's thoughts on it, as always. I just wanted to send some love to our soon-to-be mama, Marcy. I'm so excited for you and Dan to welcome your newborn, even if they do end up being a Sagittarius. Just kidding. Ian and Katya are both Sagittariuses, and they turned out just fine. Subjective opinion.
Oh my gosh.
But for real, you are such a light in this world, and it's wonderful to think of a child growing up with all that love and light. Amen. Listening to the Movie Mixtape and thinking of all the chats we've had, it's always so wonderful to hear your perspectives and to get to see the world through Marty's eyes. And your little one is lucky to have such a great mom. This is going to be a wonderful journey, and from a listener's perspective, I am stoked to see how your view of movies and characters take form as you apply a motherhood lens to the things you're watching and talking about. Anyway, just wanted to send some love and say congratulations. Happy holidays, Marcy and Dirk. Love, Boom.
Oh, we love you, Boom, so much. I wish we would have done this after I didn't have all the pregnancy hormones, because I'm currently drowning in tears right now.
I'm going to need a life jacket in a minute.
I don't know what to say. But, Boom, you did bring up that Catcher and Ian have maybe the same horoscope as my soon-to-be baby. So if you ever want to do a podcast with my baby, you're more than welcome to. I will allow it. As soon as you want. As soon as you want, Boom. Okay.
Child labor laws in action.
Oh, my gosh. Just would be a great time to see that happen, though. But thank you, Boom. That was lovely.
I got another one.
Oh, my God. I'm not ready.
This is from Bex. Hello, Dirk and Marcy.
Hello.
You guys are excellent, and your podcast fills my ears and heart with goodness. Marcy, I'm so excited for you to embark on this journey into motherhood. You are sincere, thoughtful, kind, selfless, and such a fun person. I don't have much advice on motherhood. I have been told that if your baby is upset or crying and you've tried everything to soothe them, try changing your environment. I think often going outside can be helpful when you're both at your wit's end. But regardless, if that advice works or not, please know this. You are a good mother because you are you. You are a good mother just by being Marcy. And whatever you need, we're here for you and have babysitters across the US and beyond. Best, Becca.
Oh, Bex, thank you. I just am not going to be able to talk for a little bit, but these emails are so sweet, but my heart, I'm like the Grinch right now.
You're like the Grinch? Oh, because your heart's growing.
It just is exploding out of that little, like, gold plaque or whatever.
Not because you hate Christmas, because your heart is engorged.
No, because, yeah, his heart, what, grew, like, what, 3 times the size or whatever.
Got one more? Can we do it?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we can try.
This is a voicemail, and, you know, 42 episodes down the line, we still haven't figured out how to do voicemails, have we? So let's see what happens.
Maybe when we take a break.
Let's see what happens. Okay. It's from Mikey P.
Hey, Marcy and Dirk. It's Mikey P here to give advice to Marcy on becoming a parent. And it's going to be great. You're going to rock, you and Dan. It's amazing. But don't just take my word for it. Please listen to advice from one of my satisfied customers.
Take care
of what?
Of the kid.
Take care of the kid? What does it mean to be a good parent?
You gotta feed them.
Okay.
You gotta get them to school.
Yes.
You have to make them creative.
Oh, that's a good one.
And love them. And that's it.
Very good. Thank you.
Are you recording me?
Oh my gosh. Oh man, that was so cute. I'm guessing that was Mikey's daughter, Mia, so
podcast debut. Yeah, so there we are. That's all the emails and the voicemails from all the lovely people that I've reached out, and just wanted to wish you all the best, Marcy.
Oh my goodness. You all are wonderful, beautiful, lovely friends. I don't deserve you guys, and I'm a wreck now. Hope you're all happy. So thanks.
Well, there we go. we hopefully, if things go all right, we'll have one more episode, and we're gonna have what we. Yeah. But then that'll be it. The next episode, if we can get there, will absolutely be the final episode for a little while.
I am emotionally spent now, so I don't know what you're going to get next week. Just warning you.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you what we're going to get next week. Okay, mm-hmm. So you've brought something deep from deep down, deep within your soul. You made all these wonderful connections. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, Marcy, you just really need a good time. You need someone like Idris Elba. You need someone like Guillermo del Toro, and you need giant robots battling monsters.
Yay.
So
we're
going to do Pacific Rim next week.
I genuinely love this movie, so I'm very excited.
We just need it.
Oh,
we need
it. Fun. It's been a while since I've seen it. Yeah, I'm very excited.
Me too.
Yeah.
So I want to watch it again, and I want to have a jibber jabber with you.
Oh, that'll be a lot of fun. I am really excited. Oh my gosh. I just like remembered all the people. I love Charlie Day, and I'm just like, oh yeah, Charlie Day's in this. Wow. I am really excited because I know that's like one of your favorites, but I really genuinely love Pacific Rim. So that'll
It'd be fun.
Really, that'll be a good time.
So there we go. That's what we're going to do. Fingers crossed. As long as baby stays inside a little bit longer.
Baby's first movie, Pacific Rim. I'm just going to keep making this joke until we run out of episodes.
But thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Oh, I suck on that, you sucker. 'Mixtape' is a podcast hosted by Dirk and Marcy, mixed and edited by me. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Find us on Instagram at the_moviemixtape and catch new episodes on Wednesdays. Thanks for listening. Bye!